Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Smith, Judge Bradfield, Judge Cleary, the Honorable Tracy M. Smith presiding.
Good morning. Please be seated. I'm just going to take a minute to set up here. Okay, good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It's a little loud. Today is Thursday, February 20th, 2025. We have three cases on our oral calendar today. We have two judges present in the courtroom, and a third judge, Judge Bradfield, is joining us remotely. So Judge Bradfield, let me make sure that we can hear you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Can everybody hear me? It's Judge Bradfield.
Yep.
Great.
Yes, we can. Thank you so much. And so I will try and remember throughout this to make sure that, Judge Bradfield, you have an opportunity to ask any questions that you want. You'll just have to join in when you can. And thank you for being here remotely. So the first case is A24-1782, State of Minnesota, Appellant versus Derek John Thompson, Respondent. Counsel, each of you has, first of all, argument is being live streamed via Zoom. We will keep an oral recording only, audio recording later for our public website. Counsel, you each have 15 minutes for your principal argument. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. With that, I believe, counsel for appellant, we are ready for you. If you want to take the podium, you know it goes up and down. And each of you, please state your name and the party you represent for the record at the start of your principal argument. We're ready for you.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I am Senior Assistant Hennepin County Attorney Adam Petras, and I represent the appellant in this matter, the state of Minnesota. The depraved mind murder charges in this case are horrific. Five young women lost their lives because of incredibly dangerous conduct. And the proposed Spriegel evidence in this case, which does not appear to be factually disputed in any way, of Thompson's 2018 California offense is strikingly similar and thus highly relevant, highly material, and has great probative value to those murder charges in this case. The facts of that 2018 California offense should be admissible as Spriegel evidence.
Counsel, do I have it correct that neither side asked for an evidentiary hearing on this?
That is correct.
And that the state did not ask for written findings?
I'm not sure I can agree with that part. I think the state was expecting some sort of written order.
That's different. I know that the other side said written findings if we lose, and the state may have felt that they were going to win, so they didn't need to request them. But I don't believe that the state requested written findings.
In the memorandum that was filed on September 20th, 2024, I don't believe there's an explicit request for written findings, legal analysis, conclusions of law, or an order. That was not explicitly requested in that case. If I could address exactly what Mr. Bliss wrote, I think it's index number 33 in his September 30th, 2024 memorandum on page 6 that he cites in his briefing to this court. He writes, the defense also requests that the written rulings, if the state's motion is granted in whole or part, delineate what offer of proof is approved and for what specific purposes, period. And so I don't believe Mr. Thompson, Mr. Bliss, on behalf of Mr. Thompson, was asking for the findings analysis for the purposes of appellate review. I think what he was asking for is to be very clear about which parts of the evidence, whether it be the facts, whether it be the conviction or something else, from that 2018 California offense would ultimately be admissible as Spriegel evidence if the court were to admit that. And also the purposes was very important, so the parties would know how they would be allowed to talk about the Spiegel evidence. There would obviously be the standard cautionary instruction, but whether the Spiegel evidence was being admitted for identity purposes or for mental state purposes impacts how the parties would be discussing that in closing arguments.
Okay. But again, now after the ruling from the district court, did either side request written findings now that they know how the court had ruled?
That is not in the record. I believe, from my understanding, I'm limited by what is in the record in terms of what I'm able to advance and advocate to you today. But the most that the district court was able to do was to issue that four-word docket entry, just denying the Spiegel motion, which issued after the November 4th hearing. Of course, the Spiegel issue was never discussed at any point during the November 4th hearing. I want to be clear that the state's asking for a reversal, obviously, of the order. I mean, index number 42, that four-word docket entry. And I want to be also clear that we're not asking just for this court to reverse and remand with, you know, direct instructions to the district court to put those findings on paper and to provide its reasoning and legal analysis. And I think there's several reasons that there's no need, or that this court should not simply just remand this case for that order that's lacking in this case. Because that's obviously the elephant in the room, right? That the lack of those detailed findings that you were just asking about, Judge Cleary. There's no need for this court to remand on the Spiegel issue. It can just decide the issue itself. And that's because, as far as I understand, Thompson has not identified any facts from that 2018 California offense, the proposed Spiegel evidence, that he disputes. The facts are essentially undisputed in this case. And I think he explains that in his brief to this court because Thompson pled guilty to that offense. I mean, there was no contesting what actually happened in the 2018 offense. He's already admitted what happened there. And that is the core of the Spiegel evidence that the state would like to introduce in this case. And also, there's the analysis that Thompson is actually challenging in this case. You have the analysis under the fourth.
Is Judge Bradfield. Can you hear me?
Perfect.
Yes. All right. I'd like to back up for a second. You mentioned that there are no disputed facts and that there's the guilty plea from Mr. Thompson.
Yes.
In the California case. Is that guilty plea in the record? I see it quoted in your brief, and I looked and I couldn't find it in the record. Would you help me out?
I'm not sure if it's in the record. If it were to be any place in the record, it would be in that motion exhibit, which I believe is documented as index number 45 in the record, which were the materials that, again, speaking a little bit outside of the record for the moment, were emailed to the district court's chambers at the district court judge's request and then were documented, as I understand, as index number 45, that exhibit log sheet. But I can't point you, Judge Bradfield, in all full candor, to a page of an index number that's in the record right now that contains what is quoted in the state's brief, other than what the state filed in that September 20th, 2024 Spiegel memorandum, because that's what I was quoting from, which is in the record, but again, it's being a submission provided by the state. Does that answer your question?
I mean, you've answered my question, yes, that you don't know whether it's in the record. I'm dismayed to hear that you quoted something that isn't in the record and it's in your brief. So,
I mean, Judge Bradfield, just to push back for a moment, it's in the record in the sense that it was in the state's submission that was filed in district court.
As well as I do that the appellate rules require you to rely on the record, not on lawyer argument in the district court. I mean, you can use lawyer argument for some things, but not for facts, right? You need the actual record. So go ahead with your argument, counsel. I don't think it's disputed that Mr. Thompson pled guilty in California.
Right. I would just I'd point this panel to Minnesota Rule of Civil Appellate Procedure 110.01, which says any documents that are filed in district court are part of the record. And the state's memorandum, just like the defense's memorandum, were documents that were filed in the district court record. So I believe they would constitute the record for this court to review. I want to push back or address the Thompson's reliance on the Bolt and the Blum decisions. Those are 1995 and 2004 decisions from the Minnesota Supreme Court.
Counsel, I'm going to interrupt for a minute and ask you before you do that to address critical impact here. It's not a given in this case. The state could renew its motion at the end of its case in chief, which is done very often in district court. It can arguably prove the elements that it has charged in Mr. Thompson's case from the facts of Mr. Thompson's case without the Spriegels. So could you get to critical impact, please?
Absolutely. I agree that there is enough in the record to potentially go forward with this case. And I don't think that is the standard for critical impact. I think it's the question is whether or not under Hall, the lack of this evidence seriously jeopardizes the possibility of a successful prosecution.
Well, let's address that in a greater scheme. Every prosecution would like to have Spriegels, if they're available, entered into their evidence because it makes their prosecution of the underlying offense easier. But easier isn't the standard. You would agree with that?
Agreed.
Okay. So where is the serious jeopardy here?
The serious jeopardy is looking specifically at those five accounts of depraved mind murder and the standard announced by the Supreme Court in Coleman that we have to prove the nature of the act supports an inference that the defendant was indifferent to the loss of life that this eminently dangerous activity could cause. And that is a very high threshold, and that is the mental state required for the depraved mind murder charges. And the fact that we have, rather uniquely, the defendant in this case, Mr. Thompson, personally aware of what can happen when you do essentially the same conduct that he's alleged of having been done in this case in the 2018 California offense, he knows that the loss of life that could come with that conduct. So I think it goes directly to the mental state element of the depraved mind murder charges, and that would be exceedingly difficult to prove without the Spriegel evidence. I mean, beyond that, because there's obviously three bases that the state has identified. We have the common scheme or plan, we have identity, and then we have the mental state specific to the depraved mind murder charges. And depending on how the trial goes out, and I agree with your suggestion, Judge Cleary, about having some sort of preliminary ruling or being able to revisit that, I have most commonly seen that done in the reverse, which is that there is a preliminary, the district court judge indicates they are inclined to allow the Spriegel evidence, but then they withhold, as you recall from your days as a trial court judge, they withhold that final decision on the admissibility until they see all of the state's evidence. And that's true even when you, even after Ness, when we have need not necessarily being a separate requirement, but still a consideration. It's just seeing about how the evidence plays in and what the actual disputed facts are in the trial. In this trial, there's evidence that I outlined in my brief. I don't need to repeat it right now unless there's questions, that says that the identity could easily be one of the defenses that's raised at trial because of the number of people that were in the vehicle or that were seen exiting the vehicle after the Cadillac Escalade, that is, after it slammed into the Honda Civic. And if identity becomes an issue, then that particular reason for the Spriegel evidence becomes it's much more significant. But I wanted to circle back to your critical impact question because I don't think I fully answered it. Can I do that for a moment?
Let me just ask a follow-up question briefly
Sure.
here. Are you suggesting the state can't prove the depraved mind requirement for third-degree murder through the inferences about the defendant's disregard for human life based on his actions that night?
It's definitely not impossible that we can prove without the Spriegel evidence, but I would direct this court to its precedential decision in Coleman. This court's decision in Coleman, not the Supreme Court's decision in Coleman. Because this court's decision in Coleman, they addressed a Spriegel issue in a third-degree depraved mind murder prosecution involving previous, dangerous alcohol-fueled driving conduct by the defendant in that case. And this court specifically wrote that Spriegel evidence of the previous driving conduct, not the snowmobile act that is actually the subject of the crime of, in that case, but that that Spriegel evidence demonstrated that Coleman has a particularized knowledge of the dangers of driving while intoxicated, and that general awareness of the dangers of driving while intoxicated do not translate into the intimate, firsthand knowledge of the dangers of drinking and driving that Coleman possessed due to his prior alcohol-related hit and run. And I understand that Coleman went up to the Supreme Court. It did not go up to the Supreme Court on the Spriegel issue. It only went up on the mental state issue. And Coleman, as a precedential decision, should bind this court as it's analyzing the Spriegel issue in this particular case.
And so there is no case, though, where the district court excluded and reversed that. No, and said it must, the Spriegel evidence must be included.
Oh, this court has absolutely done that. It did it last year in Kipp, which I cite in my reply brief. It's a non-precedential decision.
Okay.
I don't believe Judge Bratfold or either of you were on that particular panel. But Kipp is an example of that. McLeod, M-C-L-E-O-D, which is a 2005 Minnesota Supreme Court case, is another example.
In that one, in McLeod or McLeod or whatever that is, if I have the right one, that's where the Supreme Court reversed because there was a mistake by the district court in understanding whether it had to be a crime versus another wrong or act. Is that the case?
That may have been.
And then, and I think the Supreme Court sent it back to the district court saying, oh, you misunderstand. It doesn't need to be a crime. You know, it was a sexual abuse, but sexual assault case.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a wrong or an act, and remanded to the district court to, quote, complete the Spriegel analysis.
No.
I'm trying to, so it's just, is there a precedential opinion where there's non-precedential opinions that are helpful to look at that you've cited? Is there anything precedential where a court said it was an abuse of discretion to exclude Spriegel evidence and you must include it, admit it?
I can't cite this court right now to a precedential decision on the Spriegel issue other than McLeod, which it sounds like you're distinguishing from the situation we have here. But to be clear, just to make sure you understand what the state's asking for here, the fact of the conviction in California is not important to...
I appreciate that.
Okay, it's not important to the Spriegel evidence the state would like to introduce in this case. It's much more of the striking similarity of the conduct and the facts of what happened in the California offense, which is why it was, rather than like a certified copy of conviction, that would have to be highly sanitized, but it would be more like the underlying facts, which is why the state did include that paragraph from what it understands to be, you know, the plea admission in the California case in its brief. Zanter, which is a 1995, I understand I have 30 seconds left, I'll try to be quick, Judge Smith, but Zanter, which is a 1995 Minnesota Supreme Court case, was not Spriegel, but that was a circumstantial evidence case in which it was a state's pretrial appeal and critical impact was found, and the specific facts, or the specific evidence, I should say, that were excluded by the district court was then appealed up to the Minnesota Supreme Court, and the Minnesota Supreme Court reversed the district court and said, no, you have to include these as evidence, was keys that belonged to the murder victim and photos of women. And those were just two small pieces of circumstantial evidence. And Judge Smith, I see I'm out of time. May I just finish this up, this thought?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And then the point being there that was the evidence in that case, it wasn't like the, you know, in a typical state's pretrial appeal where you have, I mean, or a more common one, I should say, where you have the gun itself in the prosecution for, you know, illegal gun possession or the contraband like drugs themselves that are suppressed. There were small pieces of evidence that ultimately did have a critical impact in that case because of the circumstantial nature of the evidence. And I understand that there's some of the circumstantial evidence in this particular case, this prosecution against Thompson for the third-degree depraved mind murder that happened in Minneapolis in 2023. It could be viewed as strong, but at the end of the day, it is still circumstantial evidence. So Zanter is another case that I cited in my brief.
Thank you. Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And counsel for respondent.
Good morning, and may it please the court, counsel. I'll begin by objecting to the late motion to supplement the record to include the transcripts. I do not believe that those transcripts in any way hinder Mr. Thompson's case. Nevertheless, the litigant, an appellant in this case, has throughout acted like it lacks agency in producing a record and lacks responsibility to produce a record of any sort to ask this court for relief.
Why should the state have to produce a record of something that doesn't go to what the state is appealing?
I think
unless you argue that the Spiegel issues were actually discussed at the November or the August, besides a reference in the August hearings.
Well, I believe, and again, the appeal in this is somewhat difficult because having not seen the transcript and having been present at both of the hearings, as is ordinary course of conduct in Hennepin County, much of the discussions here took place in chambers.
So you're not representing that Spiegel was discussed at the November on a record hearing?
No, having reviewed the transcripts, it was not.
Okay.
However, what I will say is that having reviewed the record, the state did not make a record of this. I think, in fact, if I was correct, it would have been helpful for their argument here.
Make a record of what happened in chambers?
Yes. The state did not even ask for the court to accept the exhibits for the Spiegel evidence on the record. The extraordinary relief that counsel is asking for, just a blanket reversal, doesn't even have before you what evidence they're saying this blanket reversal is on. They're saying those three.
So the motion that was filed by the state that did not include exhibits, but is a memorandum of law that described the evidence that was they were giving notice, Spiegel notice on. Is it your argument that I understand the district court later asked for court documents from California, right, to be
correct
emailed? If the district court hadn't done that, are you saying that there would be insufficient evidence based on a state's memorandum of law giving notice of Spiegel?
In other words, that they didn't make an offer of proof?
Right.
I believe that there has to be an offer of proof or else it is unclear what the Spiegel evidence would be. Here.
And what does the offer of proof have to be in a case like that? When it's like, here's similar conduct and another previous similar conduct. What does the state need to provide?
I think the underlying documents and then whatever sufficient evidence to convince the court that those events occurred here where there was.
So if it's not, for example, if it's just another bad act, mm-hmm, and it's not a crime, there's no conviction in another case, what does the state have to submit in a Spiegel case?
Generally a witness statement of some sort.
A witness statement?
Some sort of statement that the judge can weigh. This is sort of speculative because the state didn't ask for written rulings. I asked for written rulings. I fully expected they would ask for written rulings in a denial. This is, in common litigation, you would ask for written rulings, but here they've made no record of that. They are asking. The argument is that the district court abused its discretion by failing to use it. And that is, again, just saying that the state as a litigant had no agency here and could not have requested written findings. I think if the court had refused written findings, they may be in a different position here. But where they're asking for this extraordinary relief of not just remanding for written findings, but asking that the court blanket review their theory that my client would have done any crime by any means necessary, that as a blanket policy must be reversed here when it goes directly to the character inference that is prohibited, it is just, I'm stunned that that is their argument. They argued to the district court that Mr. Thompson would commit murder by any means necessary and that didn't constitute character evidence. And it's just flatly wrong, and that's what was described in the portions of the hearing, not on the record, but they had an opportunity.
What are you referring to there, the conference in chambers?
And I understand that that is not part of the record, but it's difficult when the state in their arguments refers to it, but there were extensive chambers conversations in this case.
Go ahead. I just want to make sure I understand what you're referring to.
Okay. And again, they, by not asking for written findings or reconsideration, they have not properly framed this issue for the extraordinary interlocutory relief they're requesting. They also, I don't believe, make the critical impact standard because they, the beginning of the state's argument here today is why it isn't a critical impact. These are gruesome facts. This is one of the most viscerally felt stories in the Twin Cities in my memory. It is a case where they have strong evidence, and what they're arguing for is they need it as evidence of a modus operandi. That is the primary argument put forth here. There is a more nuanced argument that counsel is making as to state of mind. That is not what they are asking this court to do. They're asking for a blanket reversal on this modus operandi that he was doing these acts by any means necessary. And that simply is not the providence of an appellate court to rule on. What the court could do if it thinks, if it gets past the initial issue of whether or not the state has properly framed this issue for appeal, is remand for written findings. This is an appeal that probably could have been accomplished as a simple three-sentence district court request for written findings.
Mr. Blitz, this is Judge Bradford. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. I want to follow up with you. I noticed that in your argument that you, in your briefing, that you suggested that this court remand for further findings from the district court if we were inclined to, in any way, to rule in favor of the state. And I just want to understand what is it exactly that you're suggesting that we need from a district court ruling in this case. I do hear your other argument that it's not clear to you what evidence would be admitted, but just in the context of the Spriegel test, tell me what we would ask the district court to do on remand.
Well, I think it would need to make specific findings on the specific theories put forth. I think there are
I guess I want to follow up just to be clear. When you say findings, are you talking about factual findings or are you talking about determinations under the Spriegel test?
Determinations under the Spriegel test.
And which ones exactly? Because you challenged 4 and 5, I think.
Yes. I believe there were guilty pleas in these matters. I don't, in the underlying Spriegel matter, I don't think that my argument is going to be based around that. I also believe that there was adequate notice given. But I believe that where the argument specifically goes towards, the trial court brief of the state was primarily focused on a modus operandi theory. Their arguments were primarily focused on the modus operandi theory. And I think the district court, in exercising its discretion, saw that as what the state would be arguing at trial and thought that there was no way that, given the nature of the argument they were putting forth, they could the court could properly limit them from making the Spriegel evidence primarily the prohibited character reference. This case can very easily become a case of, oh, he's driven carelessly in the past, he's driving recklessly here, guilty, guilty, guilty. And instead, this needs to be a question about whether or not he had a depraved mind and whether or not he was being reckless. And those issues just simply aren't put forth in the state's brief at the trial court level. As was stated by counsel, they would have an opportunity to renew this at the close of the case in chief. I imagine they will do that regardless here. And I imagine that having done all of this briefing, they may put forward a more eloquent argument than the current argument that he was acting by any means necessary.
I don't, when I look at what the state submitted to the district court, the argument was that the California offense went to mens rea, citing Coleman, et cetera.
It does.
Why do you say that it was not raised to the district court?
I think it was raised in part. I think that in the arguments, the thrust of the argument is around the issues of modus operandi. And the arguments of counsel specifically were focused around this any means necessary. And
why doesn't Coleman, I mean, do you disagree that, speak to me about how this case is different from Coleman.
I think Coleman is about a knowledge of intoxication leading towards danger while driving. And I think that that is a specific set of knowledge. And I think that what the district court in written findings would find is that the driving conduct in California, and again, these documents are not directly before this court because they've not been produced to this court, would find that he was driving in sort of this mountainous region on the central coast of California with zigzaggy roads, and he took a corner too fast and spun out of control, which is a markedly different thing than taking an exit from I-35W going 80 miles an hour on a straightaway. It requires a generalized belief in recklessness and a character for recklessness to get to that here. And I think that in Coleman, you have a person who knows when they get drunk, they can't drive carefully. They got drunk and they didn't drive carefully. And I think there is an intermediary inference that's required to be made here that is the prohibited character reference, and I think that that is ultimately what in writing findings the district court judge would have found. So again, I would request that this court not grant the state's request for a reversal. I would, if the court is entertaining some form of relief, a blanket reversal here certainly would be appealable in my opinion, and I think would be better served as a remand for written findings. I think at the origination of this case, a brief request for written findings could have obviated this entire situation, but as it stands, I don't believe this appellant has properly framed an appeal, and the court should dismiss this. And I would cede my time.
Thank you. Counsel for the appellant.
The reason that the state ultimately moved for the inclusion in the record on appeal of the transcripts was in direct response to what Mr. Thompson put in his respondent's brief to this court about the argument on the Spriegel issue that occurred at the November 4th hearing. The state was unaware of that happening. The transcript bears that out. And so if this court is free to deny the motion to include the records, dismiss it, but I just want to make clear as to why the state made that motion that was filed yesterday for the inclusion of those transcripts. It was in direct response to the assertions that were made in respondent's brief. In terms of the factual basis for the Spriegel evidence, I think it was index number 31, which was the state's September 20th, 2024, 21-page memorandum on the Spriegel issue, following up its notice filed the previous month. On pages 4 to 6 of that 21-page submission, it describes the Spriegel evidence. And I think the reason that the state agreed when it was put on the record at that August 27th, 2024 hearing, again, this court can consider that if it were to include that transcript in the record, that the parties were content with just having the Spriegel issue handled in writing is because there was no dispute about those facts. I can understand in a different situation where, say, like the third prong of the Spriegel test about whether or not there's clear and convincing evidence of what happened was being challenged. An evidentiary hearing, an offer of proof was absolutely necessary. But after the state on September 20th filed, know, it's Spriegel memorandum, which again on pages 4 to 6 included a description of the Spriegel event. And then 10 days later, Mr. Bliss filed the defense's response. His 6-page response on September 30th doesn't even include a fact section. He just goes straight into the argument. The facts about what happened in the 2018 California offense were completely undisputed. And so I take Judge Bratvold's point from earlier that what it was quoting in the state's trial memorandum as well as in the state's appellate brief is not independently apparent in another filing made in the district court. But that's because the parties were all on the same page regarding what actually happened. And the argument, as is clear from the district court submissions as well as the briefs to this court, is about prongs 4 and 5 of the Spriegel test. I also want to push back as to the claim that the state was arguing below that the MO, you know, or the theory for the admissibility of the Spriegel evidence is that, you know, Mr. Thompson was committing murder by any means necessary. I do not think the briefing in the district court level bears that out, and I encourage you to review that. But what I see here is in both the 2018 California incident as well as the June 2023 offense that happened in Minneapolis is that there was a rental vehicle that had been rented by Mr. Thompson. He was transporting a large amount of illegal drugs in that rental vehicle. He was driving above the posted speed limit in both of those areas in that rental vehicle with the drugs. A police squad car was seen in both of those incidents. After seeing the squad car, Mr. Thompson drove dangerously to evade that squad car, and by driving dangerously, he violated the traffic laws that were in place given the particular road, whether it be Interstate, you know, 35W North, or whether it be Highway 101 and the road that was in California.
Can I just interrupt for 1 second?
Of course.
The police officer being seen in Minneapolis, is that part of, how do we know that? Just inferentially by exiting at Lake Street, or is that what you're suggesting?
It is, yes. I understand the distinction between the two instances. There was no, I believe, siren and lights that were activated by the state trooper on 35W. But remember, the state trooper was close enough that he was able to see exactly what was happening, including that Cadillac Escalade, violate multiple traffic laws, blow through a red light, and just bombard that Honda Civic as it was crossing the intersection.
Putting aside the similarity of the offenses, counsel, are you aware of any controlling authority suggesting that specific findings, either written or oral, or on the record, are required for a district court to deny a pretrial motion to admit Spriegel evidence?
I am not. I'm not aware of anything that requires that. And I guess that is not necessarily what the state is objecting to here. It's more objecting to the ultimate decision to exclude the Spriegel evidence. But in the Spriegel context specifically, I can't cite you to any precedential legal authority that says those findings are required.
Okay, well, let's go to that more specific issue. Would you agree that the district court has a great deal of discretion in deciding whether to deny the entrance of Spriegel evidence?
It has discretion as it does in all evidentiary rulings. I wouldn't say great deal. I would say the standard amount of discretion.
Okay.
I mean, just like this district court had the standard amount of discretion in McLeod or in Kipp or in Zanter about those evidentiary rulings that were ultimately found to have a critical impact in those cases and then reversed by an appellate court that was reviewing them. I apologize if I went over my time. I'm happy to entertain any other questions, but...
Let me make sure. Judge Bratvold, do you have any questions?
Nothing further, thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you both for your briefing, for your arguments this morning. The matter is submitted. We'll have a decision out within the statutory time period. Thank you.